coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
If you can be Batman, be Batman.
Yeah.
But if you get a second choice, be Kurt Russell.
Yes, I'm being Kurt Russell.
That's the way to go with
it. And in some instances, be Kurt Russell first.
Yeah, that's true.
And there are plenty of times like Batman would be handy, but man, being Kurt Russell right now would be the best.
Why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you? All right, are you ready to start this thing?
I think we need to start this thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. We got a very special issue. We're going to be joined a little later by a very special guest, someone we know and love. I don't even know how to start this thing, man. Like, it's...
The only way I can figure you start this is meow.
No. That's rough. That's rough. I think this would be the third show we've started by doing that, and that's fine. I'm okay with it.
It's been a few years since we've meowed, so...
No, the whole topic here, and we have very little time right now. We got big things a popping in the next few weeks. We're running around like chickens with our heads cut off, but... We
may even have to have another hiatus, but a short one.
Well, the difference between a hiatus and a hiatus is at the end of the next hiatus, which should only be like 2 weeks, we're going to have so much fresh content to drop that it's not you won't miss us. That's the difference. And of course we'll speak to that
a little bit.
We'll speak to that a little later. I'm always dropping fresh content. Just drop it. That's what I call it, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm regular.
More fresh content.
But tonight we finally made the trip and the trek to watch Black Panther. And tonight we talk about Black Panther. Because how do you not talk about Black Panther?
It's inescapable at this point. We really need to talk to somebody.
We need to talk to somebody about Black Panther. That's absolutely accurate. Where do we even begin here? So many things fold into this movie, especially in the aftermath of its release. It has made so much money. It has had such a cultural and social impact on the world, frankly. It had huge openings in the U.S. It had huge openings in Korea and in Africa. There's a huge social aspect to this film. And you know, for us coming from the comic book world, there is a huge comic book aspect to this movie.
As fanboys, we have been waiting for Black Panther since Wesley Snipes said he was
right
for the role. And years later, Wesley Snipes said he was still vying for the role. And years after that, Wesley Snipes said he'd really like the role.
Exactly.
And, you know, I think in many ways it would have been so cool. Wesley Snipes would have been amazing as T'Challa / Black Panther, but would we have had the kind of Black Panther that an established universe gives us?
Well, I think that it's important for a couple reasons, right? You have to have the right universe, the right cast at the right time. And that's what this gave us. We needed the society, I think, in a weird way, needed this movie. And I think in a weird way, and I don't think it's even been parsed yet, right? I don't think our people, and by our people, I mean our comic book people, have even parsed what this means for us yet, that we had this movie. So I want to ask this question, and I don't think the reason I said this, I don't think that we would have had that movie with that impact in 2002 with Wesley Snipes.
Absolutely not, because back then, one of the questions when we were struggling with where literally do we begin before I derailed it all with that really awkward and uncomfortable meow thing was
my ringtone.
Yeah, was that the you know, back then, a Wesley or a Wesley movie, a Black Panther movie would have been a standalone. Black Panther is it. He's the sole character in the Black Pantherverse, in the same way that pretty much everybody was.
Blade, for instance.
Blade, Batman. You know, there was no greater universe in which these characters were portrayed. So in many ways, I think there was, we didn't know it, but I think that we all kind of felt in a strange sort of way that these characters were being hamstrung by the virtue of the fact that they were never going to be part of anything bigger. If it wasn't a, and probably a lot of it was how the licenses were, you know, if you bought Black Panther, you bought Black Panther and Killmonger and Ape Man and or Man Ape rather, and maybe a handful of other characters that from a licensing standpoint were directly associated, and you didn't get anything else.
Right.
You didn't get the Fantastic Four in the bargain or the Avengers in the bargain. And, you know, part of what, it's not really riding on the coattails or anything, but it is greatly bolstered by being part of a greater universe. You have a built-in audience who've been following the Marvel Cinematic, sometimes even forgiving the Marvel Cinematic. You've got your hardcore comic book fanboys who are going to line up. And then word of mouth, this becomes like The Dark Knight was, where word gets out that it's not just a superhero movie. It's a really good movie that happens to be a superhero movie. And so you get the audiences and the impact that a really good movie gets and deserves.
I agree with that, but I also think we can't ignore or pass up or let go unsaid the fact that there are extreme social aspects to this movie that need to be talked about. Because what this movie, and okay, so caveat, are you ready? If we had the Micro Machines guy, I would have him talk right now. We are two middle-aged white dudes, and we are going to talk about race now. Deal with it.
And also, if you haven't seen the movie yet, it's going to be spoiler rich.
Oh, yeah.
But that is pretty much secondary to the initial announcement there.
Yes, it is. This is a movie, not only, this is a comic book movie like we've never seen before. Because it was a comic book movie based in Africa. It was a comic book movie that was Afrocentric and Afrofuturistic, which I think was probably the coolest thing about this movie, was the fact that it was, you know, there's this huge Afrofuturism movement out there with Tahani Coates and guys like that that are writing, you know, Afrofuturistic sci-fi, and it's amazing. And I think that this movie is more socially relevant than any other, than most any other movie I've seen, let alone any other comic book movie I've seen. And I think that that makes it all the sweeter because, much like we've talked about this so many times on this show, all good sci-fi and all good fantasy, and comic books fall into that category, hide their allegory in good fiction and story writing and a fun story. So all of a sudden, you've got these packed audiences being confronted with these social issues and seeing an uncolonized Africa and what can happen and how powerful that is. And a movie where, and we'll talk about this more in depth, I'm sure, later, where the only two white dudes in the entire movie are a hackneyed bad guy and the third string sidekick.
Exactly. And it's such a role reversal
from anything.
But it's not, it doesn't slap you in the face. And that, I think, is the real strength here, is it has a very deep social undertone. It turns a lot of convictions on their ear.
Yeah.
But it doesn't just slam you in the face with, oh, look what we did. Because it just tells this really good story that in retrospect you begin to realize, good Lord, they did a lot of stuff that nobody does.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, but there's also aspects of tribalism. And by that I mean, you know, the close-knit family unit, the it takes a village analogy. There are literal family, right? His younger sister in the comic books later becomes the Black Panther. And we start to see inklings of that kind of thing happening in this movie.
Yeah, she does get an opportunity to go out there and bring the fight to the enemy.
Well, the one thing I really loved about that scene was, so she's the new generation, right? And I love the old generation. I love the three generations that we get in this movie. We get the old traditional generation. Then we get kind of the middle generation, what we were, you know, our Gen Xers, which I think Black Panther falls into that category. Along with a few other people. But then we get the younger generation, who, when presented with putting on battle armor,
yeah, exactly,
it's just like, I'm not wearing that. It's like, it's armor, put it on. And so she,
you're going to go into battle.
Overcomes that generation gap to come together with her family, which is, it's just a. Let me ask you this question. All that being said, right? You went into the movie theater to see this thing. How many people were there?
That was a pretty decently packed house for the day we went.
Right.
It was an early in the day on a Saturday or Sunday. So, you know, it wasn't like prime time movie going, which is why we were able to get a seat, number one, because, most people, like my uncle and our good friend Stephen Fett's dad, he and Stephen, the week before, had to go to a Sunday midnight showing because that was the earliest on opening weekend they could get in the damn theater.
Mm-hmm.
The earliest was the end of the weekend of opening weekend.
Well, I went in, it was like a Tuesday night or something like that. And it was a fairly packed showing. There were a fair amount of people there. It's been a long time since I went to a movie and watched this movie and legitimately felt good. Had a sense of feeling good about the movie, in the movie. Not about the movie I'm watching, but it's hard to describe. There was sort of a sense of being uplifted. Usually these movies, if you go see Age of Ultron, which we talked about a little bit before the show, or, the Marvel movies are pretty dang heavy.
Yeah.
Even the Guardians of the Galaxy movies are pretty heavy movies. You know, they're dark. They're very bright. They're very dark movies. They're sort of foreboding. They're badass a lot of times. You know, if you look at something like Winter Soldier, it's full of espionage and ass beating. But it's a fairly dark, heavy movie.
There's a lot of dark undertones. I think you see they're kind of like, lighten up, Francis.
Right.
With Thor, Thor Ragnarok, where that led to some people complaining that there was too much humor.
Juxtaposed against what it was trying to achieve, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I felt that it was a very dark movie with a lot of violence and then a whole lot of, a whole lot of slapdash humor involved as well. But this movie, I felt good. It was a bright movie.
Yeah.
It didn't happen in the dark. It didn't happen in the, some of it did. Some of it did, but it didn't happen in the shadows.
Just the stuff down in the catacombs there and the in the heart-shaped herb garden. Which apparently the heart-shaped herb not only gives the king of Wakanda his powers, it also does not require sunlight, making it unique amongst flowering plants.
Oh my god.
Sorry, I had to throw in a little biological logic aspect there.
But yeah, that, I mean, it felt good to be in the movie theater. I'm going to say that.
Yeah, it was, and it also leaving the movie theater after the film, apart from the fact that I had to piss like a racehorse, I felt incredibly satisfied.
Yeah, I did too. And
even more so after visiting the men's room. But, you know, I thought that was a damned satisfying movie. And if I had, you know, 3 hours to rub together between now and AllCon, I'd be back in the theater.
I know exactly what you mean.
But I don't have any time. So, but, you know, I just, that was a fun, you know, it had the action, the excitement, the fights. It had just the right level of humor.
I agree.
It was spiced with humor, but not laden with it. You know, if and then, you know, also, like you say, it had a lot of undertones and a lot of themes that were heavy but not heavy-handed.
Correct.
And that's a very fine line to walk. One of my favorite aspects of that is Nakia, when she's confronted with loyalty to, you know,
the new king.
Yeah, it's being loyal to her country or being loyal to who is right. You know, she is a staunch soldier.
Right.
And in the end, you know, Will does stand up for what's right. And not solely because the tide is turning, you know. Because her complicity with the with Killmonger, she's not necessarily complicit with him so much as the rule of law.
Right.
And when the, you know, if Manape guy had
we need to talk in depth about Manape guy.
Yes, we do. You know, if he had ascended the throne successfully, she would have taken the same stance. Granted, he would have been a hell of a lot better king because he didn't have a 40-pound chip on his shoulder.
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct about that.
Baku, by the way, who in the comics is the laughably costumed Manape.
Let's get into some of the depictions, right? Because there's a few I want to talk about, and there's a few really cool things that they did.
And there's a sheer brilliance to taking some characters where you have a limited rogues gallery, and you have some oftentimes, like I say, laughable depictions of these characters, and to take them and breathe new life into them without being insulting.
Yeah.
Well, and simultaneously pay tribute to where they came from.
Well, not only do it without being insulting, right, but update them in such a way to make them a viable character. Because I don't think that they were ever really... And like so many characters that were created and put forth in the 70s, it was hard to produce viability. I'll say that, right? Like these characters were not made for TV or movies. They were made for the ridiculousness that is the comic book. So you have to take, anytime you do this, whether it's Iron Fist or whether it's Daredevil or whether it's X-Men or whether it's, you know, Black Panther, you have to take these characters. Like, can you imagine the original Ultron in Age of Ultron? The rolling toaster. That would never fly. So you have to really update these characters. And I think that a lot of the updating, like, for instance...
Real quick, though, I have to point out, I said Nakia, I meant Okoye.
Okay. I'm not trying names tonight, by the way. You can go for that all day. I'm not even.
I'm falling back on IMDb.
Nice, but for instance, I think that Ulysses Claw needs to be mentioned here, because Ulysses Claw went from being this character in the Marvel comics that had an old 1992 satellite dish strapped to his arm.
And he had, you know, in that way that, you know, in comics, especially back when everybody wasn't trying to be too serious about what they were presenting, you could have a guy who got turned into, like, solid sound.
Right.
So he's like, you know, he's made of sound.
I mean, that stuff still happens in comics. Let's be fair.
Except for his satellite dish hand.
Right. Well, he had a containment suit and then a satellite dish hand. I don't know what happened.
Okay, so, oh, that's why it had like a sort of a costume look, because it only came in one style.
Yeah, yeah.
So he sort of stuck with it.
Fuchsia is the color it came in.
Somebody was having a laugh about that.
So and then you get his. You said it perfectly. How hard is it to computer generate a hand, first of all?
Yeah.
Secondly, how hard is it to computer generate a hand that looks that fake, so that when you see it,
exactly,
you're like, that is a fake-ass hand.
Fake. But also, what's brilliant is the casting of Andy Serkis as Ulysses Claw in Age of Ultron, because absolutely all of us assumed, of course you'd cast Andy Serkis, because you're going to Gollum the hell out of Claw.
Sure,
so
no.
So you need the preeminent motion capture artist. And it's like, holy shit, they let him act.
Yeah, they let him get yoked.
They just let him be an actor.
They let him get all shredded like a bag salad over there.
Yeah, and then I was just half waiting for the, okay, here comes the part where, you know, I'll concede one thing. I'll let him have, somehow they make Claw into, like, Ulysses Claw into Claw.
I still think they're going to do it. I still think they're going to do it.
Because, I mean, he got drug all the way home in a parachute or something, so.
I still think it'll happen. Yeah. I really do.
But the thing is, they didn't present the character in any way where that would make any sense. Where in the comics, you know, he was like some sort of sonic expert, which naturally makes you into you would turn into the thing you work with.
That's, yeah, but isn't he sort of like the gold member of Vibranium?
Oh, that's so true.
So he's like super, I love Vibranium. But yeah,
I got better. And you were killed. I got better.
And the idea that you now have a reference point to both of the suits that Black Panther wore,
yeah,
was really cool. Like that, it's all contained within the necklace.
Yeah, that was a clever concept and brilliantly put forth by the necklaces just sort of hanging on the translucent dummies as kind of foreshadowing to something you didn't know was coming. And it also, by him choosing the less ostentatious one,
right,
it leaves the very one that would be appealing to Killmonger behind for his use.
Sure. Yeah.
And, you know, when you get that one, you're not too broken up about the fact the other one went over Wakanda Falls there.
Well, and the cool thing about that was, you know, there is a reference point in the comic for that gold necklace. That gold necklace exists in the comics.
Uh-huh.
In one of the, I believe it was in the Marvel Knights relaunch of, you remember that Marvel Knights? Chris Priest wrote it. It was the same one where Punisher was an angel and could produce angelic weapons out of his coat, and Kevin Smith wrote the Daredevil line, the Daredevil comic for that, and I can't think of the other Marvel Knight that was included in that initial run. But Black Panther, I think, had that gold suit. So there is a point of reference in the comics for that gold suit. Just the same as there is a point of reference in the comics for Killmonger, which I thought was a great story to tell.
In fact, Killmonger's been around for freaking ever.
Right.
Which is so cool. I remember like in the 70s or 80s having a, you know, you just sort of pick up comics piecemeal here and there that you weren't necessarily collecting. And there was a story where Black Panther and somebody else were fighting Killmonger and Madam Slay.
Oh, my God. Madam Slay. Yeah, but the story that they told, right, was amazing. I think that is more than anything. I think that the story that they told sold me on the movie. That and the fact that I do believe that Killmonger is the most approachable villain that Marvel has had in their roster yet.
He is certainly the most humanized. Yeah. Even more so than Trevor from Iron Man 2.
God, Trevor.
You know, Trevor becomes this almost sympathetic character.
Yeah.
Even though there's a glaring plot hole that we won't talk about here. But, you know, like you said, this is the most approachable, realistic feeling character. Because he has that giant chip on his shoulder, but with good reason. I mean, good night. His dad was, like, you know, secret Wakanda spy who, like, probably shouldn't be mentioning Wakanda, but, you know, wanted his son to know about his heritage a little bit. And then he gets, you know, there's this implicit sense of, you know, if you think about things like too much like we do, you have this implicit sense that, okay, you know, this kid probably grew up in the foster system. And, you know, just the layers and layers of bitter.
They set it up so friggin' perfectly. But
you don't have to have that all handed to you.
Well, but what I mean is so we open on that scene.
Yeah.
Right? We open on the scene with his father dying. Yeah. That's the first 5 minutes. We get... The first shot is outside of the projects. Kids playing basketball. Pan into the building. They're planning something. They've got their guns. Hide the guns. You know, there was a knock at the door. Hide the guns. It's the, you know, it's the Royal Guard and Black Panthers at the door.
Yeah, exactly. And I love the fact that they're like, what? And there's so many things. Like, what's so really cool is young Zuri there is pretending like he didn't know who the hell that is outside the door.
Well, I also love that young Zuri. Did they CG? I gotta ask this. This is gonna be the most un-PC thing I ask on this show.
I know where you're headed with this.
I gotta ask though.
Said, what are the chances of two lazy-eyed actors?
Well, no, I was gonna ask. Did they CG that eye, or was there? Is that just some brilliant character actor that rolled his way into a lazy?
Do they have a casting call for somebody who looks like a young Forrest Whitaker?
Yes! Did they? Or is it CG? Was it Jordan Peele as baby Forrest Whitaker? What was going on there? Because it was... You don't even notice it. You don't even notice it until you find out that's who it is.
Exactly.
And then you flash back and you're like, holy shit. This is brilliant.
Yeah. But there were just so many brilliant notes there, and you don't realize who the kid is outside, paying so much attention to, and why he cares so much about what's going on upstairs. Or
yeah, they show you the villain as a child, and you don't even know it. God, exactly. It's so good. So good.
And can we talk a minute about the costuming for this?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, holy crap. The Black Panther costume from Civil War is downright brilliant.
Yeah.
And if you get a, you know, you can get shots of it up close. There's so many subtle, like, you know, in the comics, it's just sort of a typical superhero tunic with the big boots and everything. But, you know, the neat thing with Black Panther, I always loved that he had like the corduroy boots and the corduroy gloves.
Yeah. The textured. Yeah.
Yeah. That sort of like two-tone look going on. But I mean, the richness of patterns that invoke a kind of African theme.
Yeah.
And motifs that you see in a lot of, like the way buildings are painted in tribal, in African tribes in some parts of the country, and different little motifs like that just sort of built into the look. And then, you know, they're just one-upping it. And then with the Black Panther costume that Killmonger has, this very subtle, like you know, essentially, if you've ever seen a, like a leopard, black leopard up close, you can actually see the leopard spots.
Mm-hmm.
And I love how they kind of incorporated these little just sort of hints of golden spots all through the thing.
I will say this, and we talked about this after the movie, is you are right. I did my research. The mystical powers of the heart-shaped herb are taken directly from the comic book. So I will give deference to
well,
you.
Well, see,
sir.
I have to say I read very at least early into the series the Marvel Universe guidebook series.
You're a nerd
just
like
read
me.
It
just
incessantly.
Read it. Yeah.
Yeah. About halfway through the series, you stopped caring and just read about the characters you really wanted to know about. But I remember that the heart shaped herb, and so I was glad to see that that got preserved in a way that didn't make it stupid.
But in the comic,
it sounds kind of stupid when you read about it in the Marvel Universe.
Well, but when you get Black Panther in the comic, there's a couple you know deviations from the comic books that I didn't like, and I really hope that they're course corrected. But the one thing that I never liked about the idea of this Black Panther was, okay, so you've got – it's almost the way that they do Spider-Man now, if he has the Tony Stark Spider-Man suit.
Yeah, okay.
Where you – okay, so you've got a guy that you've now given inherent superpowers to, right? He's got super agility. He's got super strength. He's got, you know – all of the heightened senses, you know, he's basically the Panther Man to Spider-Man. And I have the same problem with Spider-Man when you give him a Tony Stark suit. And it's this. Then you're going to stack on top of that a battle suit, what is essentially a battle suit. You're just overpowering this guy, and maybe you're building that up for a fight with Thanos where you would need something like that. Okay.
I hadn't made the connection there as sort of Thanos building. And I see what you're talking about. Because one of the things I thought with Spider-Man Homecoming was being able to get that synergy where Stark could be the source of the suit, because it's the only way it makes any sense. If you have anything beyond just a very rudimentary Halloween costume. You know, where you go with, like, the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man, where he's, like, sketching out stuff,
yeah.
And all of a sudden he's got, like, this $500,000 suit running around, like, okay, that – how is that even a thing? But, it, you know, if you Spider-Man and his amazing friends it, then, you know, three college kids can afford a loft apartment in New York, plus, you know, flip over tech.
The push button. Again, I asked the question: did you just buy the entire building and rent one apartment to Spider-Man and his amazing friends?
But the thing about it is, yeah, I see now what you're talking about just overdoing it. But at the same time, I think in many ways it's a testament to the source material in that, or the universe in which it's taking place, Tony Stark wouldn't know how to half-ass it. Even if he was building something for someone else, he would just be like, oh, you know what else I could cram in here?
Yeah.
So if you look at it from that angle, yeah, I do see where you're saying it kind of grossly overpowers the character. Puts him into a, you know, Thanos punching level. But at the same time, there's a sensibility behind it that I could argue because it's Stark.
But then again, I'll give you that for Spider-Man. But when we're talking about Black Panther, we're talking about tradition and something that's handed down from generation to generation. Yeah. I'm not saying it doesn't need to grow with the times, right? Or the technology, because obviously they're equally technologically advanced to a Stark or a Richards, right? Yeah. I mean, we see that. That's amazing. That the shit that they did was awesome in the movie. But I just feel like you wouldn't have had that. You know, I feel like some sort of standard suit. And if the suit's sole purpose was you wear this thing so you can hide your suit, and if you need it, you get your suit.
Yeah.
If that was it. None of this, it's built with vibranium, so if you get punched, and they did establish it, they did a decent job of establishing that even their clothes are made with vibranium when Claw was in the interrogation room. good world building, good covering your ass for this. But I just feel it's never felt natural to me that Black Panther needs both superpowers and a suit. The same way Spider-Man's got, I mean, the asshole's got spider senses, literally. Like, he doesn't need extra lenses with infrared. Like, just, he's got spider senses. Like, this guy's got heightened senses, the senses of a panther. Does he really need a suit with special lenses that can see, you know? Well,
and I think there it again falls into the realm of just sort of techno hubris.
new show, write it down, put it on the list. We're doing a show on techno hubris.
Techno hubris.
Guess who's going to host that show? Ultron Cafe.
Ultron Cafe. That was actually, techno hubris was their 17th album.
Technically, their 18th. Their 17th album was so bad they didn't name it. They named the 18th Techno Hubris.
That's right. But the
that was a good joke. I'm proud of myself for that.
I like that. That was solid work.
Thank you.
But it manifests itself in this case through the vehicle of Shuri, who, by the way, was a freaking wonderful character. Perfect. I absolutely loved Shuri. I absolutely loved the affection between her and T'Challa.
Oh, they nailed the familial relationship so hard.
Didn't they? I mean, not since the Darjeeling Express have I seen that level of recognizing how siblings are.
Oh yeah, it was the setup for him getting the setup for the bit, the gag where he punches the suit.
Darjeeling Limited, by the way.
I was trying to move past it, but you didn't let me.
That was a murder mystery with these three brothers on a trip to India with Hercule Poirot.
I tried. Ladies and gentlemen, I tried to get past it. He wouldn't let it go.
I couldn't let it ride.
The setup, the perfect sibling prank I saw depicted on screen in this movie. The setup for the punch the suit punches back.
Yes.
Was perfect. It's exactly something I would have done with my brother. It's exactly something that, you know, I know everybody that has a sibling would do. Like, why'd you move over there? Oh, I'm just trying to get a better... Are you filming this? Like, no, I'm just trying to get a better angle. This is for research.
Okay, let me touch upon something that really struck me, and if I'm not careful, I'm not going to get this out here. I loved the depiction of Wakanda being a kind of amalgam of separate tribes.
Oh, that
came together to form a country and defy the convictions of the rest of the world. And there's some wonderfully subtle things there. There is a suggestion, if not a kind of just admission, that T'Challa's mom, there are some costume elements, and I think at one point she's got the Xena rings.
Yes, she does, yeah.
And that are illustrated in one of the various tribes. So it suggests that his mom was from one of the varied tribes and his dad was from another, which I think is really cool because in that kind of amalgam, all those tribes would be intermarrying because, you know, they're like separate but equal, separate but, you know, part – they're all Wakandan.
Right.
At the end of the day, but yet they each get to maintain the cultural aspects of the ancestral costume and the ancestral rites and things. And I thought that was just such a clever idea of this kind of nation that's made up of various individual, almost like a microcosm of countries like the United States or UK or other, like, you know, where it's, you know, all these like different smaller countries or city states or what have you that become part of a larger nation. And I thought that was a neat idea.
I agree.
And it was just something that it's, again, there was so much that was sort of very subtly presented. It wasn't crammed down your throat. And I think that's the more brilliant. And with that, I want to – we need to bring in our special guest.
Is she there?
Yeah, let me yeah, we want to ask the Mrs. Jedi Cole.
Our movie expert has arrived.
Our movie expert, the original – the creator, the founder of What'd You Think? And who I think has quite a bit to say about Black Panther as well, because much like the inspiration of her show, What'd You Think, the conversation on the way home from the theater was pretty good. So I'm going to, what'd you say, the Beastie Boys would say?
Yeah, you got to pass the mic.
I got to pass the mic, and I'm going to pass the mic right now here in just a moment. I had to, like, you know, this is sort of like ambush podcasting because she didn't know she was going to be on the show.
Somebody asked me how we do podcasting the other day, and I said the closest thing I can describe it as is just punk music. Like we just do, like we like our if we spent the time, our quality could be better, but who cares? We want this. We want the raw. We want it to be real.
Yeah, and this is going to get as real as it gets. I'm going to literally take off these headphones and hand them over.
Catherine B. Real Houston is joining
us. Yeah, here comes Catherine B. Real Houston. Here we go.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Catherine. First question. Killmonger, hot or super hot? Sorry, I've got it. Holy wow. Shit. Sorry. Just yeah. Immediately, just Hunkalicious Rex. Just putting it out there.
Oh gosh, most of the scenes hunkalicious, a couple of scenes hunk, but you know, probably just the costume.
We're gonna have to break it down frame by frame to really.
Yeah. We could. Can we do that?
Yeah, I can arrange it. Don't worry.
I'm on board there.
We're in a theater at Alcon. It'll be 24 hours of scene by scene inspection of.
That's right. Chardonnay matinee. It's happening.
But for those of you that don't know, this is the lady Catherine Houston. She's a podcaster in her own right. She's also the one that makes Cole and I look the dumbest. So we love having her around because she's brilliant and she's funny. And it's been way too long. As our resident movie expert, what did you think of this, mainly in comparison to the other Marvel movies, you know, like...
Okay, in comparison to the other Marvel movies, I think it was one of the best I've ever seen.
I agree.
I've been kind of half listening to you guys, recording because I always love to do that, but I'm hoping I'm not repeating too much of what you guys already said, but on my personal opinion, something that as a girl I observed
yes
is it's of the Marvel movies, more of the superhero movie, really. It is one of the strongest female hero movies that I have ever seen.
Absolutely.
And it's got all of these fantastic, strong female characters, and they're strong without – they don't need to be better than guys or put guys down or have some guy, you know, the one stereotypical character who's a jackass to women just to thwart. They don't need that to stand out and be recognized. And I found so many wonderful, relatable female characters. I think I would suspect that a lot of people who go to see superhero movies probably have that one character that they relate to.
Right.
And with superhero movies, while I enjoy them, I don't really relate to any of the characters. But I related to a lot of the characters in this film. And I'm like, I can see her point of view. I could see her point of view. One of my favorite lines, I think, so far in a superhero movie was in this movie. And forgive me if I don't get it to the letter, but basically it's when they're, you know, this transfer of power has been made, and now the for all intents and purposes, the asshole is in charge now.
Yeah.
But the observation is made, this is the monster we made.
Right.
You know, and anarchy isn't the answer, and breaking all of our own laws isn't the answer. We've got to own this and correct it within the system. Otherwise, we've turned our back on our system. And I was like, you know, but you know, he's the monster we made. So we've got to own him. I thought that was just magnificent. My personal opinion, the action was great. The acting was great. You had a great balance between kicking of ass and saying of things. Anybody who knows me, my pet peeve is when everything has to stop so we can either have sex or talk about our feelings.
Yeah.
And we didn't get any of that, which was nice. You know, we got exposition without gushy mushy.
Yeah.
You got a lot of whether they were good guys or bad guys. These people, all the characters had depth. I didn't see anybody who was really just kind of cookie cutter good guy or bad guy. And that's something that I really enjoyed too, because going up against defeating somebody with a developed character is kind of more of a satisfying challenge than just shooting cardboard cutouts of things.
I agree. No, I wholeheartedly agree with you.
Okay, I'm sorry. Am I not letting you talk at all? I'm not letting you talk at
all. Oh, stop it. No, this is you. There is one thing I wanted to say, though, about what you just said, right? About the representation of women in these movies that don't exist. And we finally get a Wonder Woman movie. It's good. I have no complaints about this DC's Wonder Woman movie. One thing that this movie gave us all that we have not had yet, and I've thought about this long and hard, and I've gone back through and I've looked for it, is we've had kick-ass women. We've had Gamora, and we've had, you know, these women who are kick-ass, your Black Widows and those, right?
Uh-huh.
This movie gave us something different, and that was a woman who, perish the thought, is a genius.
Yeah, yeah. And I loved my character. I don't remember any of the names, but the younger sister.
Yeah, I'm not doing names with this.
That character was just phenomenal. And I also loved the fact that she was young and they let her be young, especially, you know, when you're a young person and, you know, everybody goes to the family reunion and you can't help it. You got to say something snarky about this, that, or the other. And she's got that, you know, kind of a, you know, it's like, okay, I'm here and I'm playing along, but, you know, really? And I loved that because like any young person, you know, half of you wants to be the adult included with the adult stuff, but the other half still wants to have that wonderful distance, wonderful perspective that you get when you're a kid that you lose.
Yeah.
When you have to make the choice to hand over the reins and be an adult because there's always a little bit of that left, you know, in all of us, no matter how important the ceremony, there's always, you know, something in the back of your head that you're going to like, you know, I know this is a solemn occasion, but can you believe she wore that?
she hit one line. So the setup for the movie, as we all know, was, you know, it follows the events of Civil War, where they take Winter Soldier, and he takes Winter Soldier back to Wakanda after the events of Civil War. And there's a line that she has that's so brilliant when they bring in, oh, what's his teeth? Like I was saying earlier, Hobbit McShield guy. Everett Ross. When they bring in Everett Ross and she goes, oh, great, another white boy for me to fix. It's like, that's brilliant. That is brilliant.
That was good. And I love the fact that you didn't really get, or those who didn't just instantly get it, you didn't really find out what exactly she was talking about until the cookie at the end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another thing that I loved was the fact that they didn't feel obliged to have a Pryborg flyby by Iron Man.
Thank God, or a
name drop of, you know, talking about what happened in New York, or they didn't feel like they had to, you know, it's like, okay, everybody, we're linked to the Marvel Universe this way. And it's like, no, we understand why you're, you know, we're here. We don't really care how, we don't want to talk about Iron Man right now.
Can I ask you a question? Were you a little nervous like I was about, let's say, halfway through the movie, that you all of a sudden realized this movie is really, really, really good, and you were scared they were going to ruin it with with one of the Chris's showing up, whether it be Chris Hemsworth or Chris Evans or Chris Pine or Chris Sabo, the second baseman for the Reds, whichever, you know, blonde white guy was going to come riding in on a horse and save it, like, you know what I mean? Like, I was really, I got real concerned, like, just don't ruin it. Please don't. We don't need it. Like, just keep going.
I was right there with you. It was like, I'm thinking, okay, if Ant-Man shows up, I'm leaving.
Amen to that. Amen. I'm out.
I'm not even not even taking the popcorn.
If Paul Rudd shows his ass in this movie, I'm leaving. No, I agree. I wholeheartedly... Now, what's really interesting is, and this might be a little bit of a, you know, a fork in the road for the conversation, but it's one that you brought up, so I want to... And thank you for bringing it up, by the way, because Cole and I, you know, being two middle-aged white dudes just trying to figure out, didn't. That, you know, I did want to talk about the female presence in this movie. And I did want to talk about the fact that, you know, for the first time in a long time, I felt that it wasn't a Black Widow situation. It wasn't happening because, okay, so the women in this movie weren't powerful because of Black Panther. They were powerful at the same time as the Black Panther and not even in the same place as the Black Panther.
Exactly.
Which was awesome. But they're
his
saying
power
that...
power wasn't linked to anybody else's anything.
Right. There were no coattails being ridden in this movie.
Exactly.
And they're saying that 2018, this Phase 4, after this next Avengers run, that it's going to be... that the Marvel Cinematic Universe is going to become very, very female-centric. Very, very... very, very dominated by the woman superhero with the likes of Captain Marvel and the Wasp. And they're talking about a possible Valkyrie spinoff for the Thor movie, or at least she's going to play a bigger part in the coming movies. You know, and I feel like, and I don't want to ask you this question, I feel personally like that is something that we absolutely need. Because, again, I think we're way too dominated by guys named Chris in this universe. But do you see a backlash or anything happening with this kind of fake testosterone BS group that, I'll be honest, that in some respects, you know, we cater to as
yeah,
podcasters,
yeah.
You know?
Well, the majority of the podcasts are created by the fan base, and the history of the genre is male centric.
It is.
And therefore the male centric genre has created a male centric fan base, and wow, they're whining about this? Oh my God, I'm so shocked.
Right.
But there's also cool, awesome slices like you and Cole who feel that a more even playing field just brings the better to add to the good that's already there.
Sure.
And isn't a positive in one direction doesn't mean a negative in the other. And I don't think that Iron Man or Superman or Daredevil, God bless his soul, is gonna lose a single fan just because there's another crowd coming up to join them.
Yeah.
I think it's fantastic. I'm a Batman fan. I always have been, always will be. And whenever they make I'm a Superman fan. And whenever they make a shitty Superman movie, I cry. But so, you know,
well,
I cry a lot.
I often cry. There's one thing I wanted to say that I thought this movie, you know, since we're talking about the female characters, the women, is in any other movie, a fight between Killmonger and, you know, the badass ladies of Wakanda would be this. Killmonger would be like, oh, women, I don't want to hit a girl. And then, you know, they'd hit him in the face and he'd be like, okay, then, you know, you have it coming now. And those... Because of the parity of society, even in Africa to this day, right? It's a very matriarchal society. They folded that in so well that wasn't even, and it was refreshing that we didn't even have to deal with that.
Yes.
There wasn't any, this was all tribal, no sexism, no ageism, no racism. This movie was pure.
Didn't it feel wonderful?
That's what I was meaning when
didn't
I said
it feel wonderful. And it was, I'm like, I want to live in that world.
Right? Right?
Oh, you know, forget Thor's hometown. This is the world I want to live in.
Right? I agree. Oh my God. Well,
I guess one of the things that the observation that I made, well, I would like to make, is I thought that, and I don't really know how to word this well, but you got this is a film, like you said, based in a non-American culture.
Correct.
And then you got this glimpse into American culture juxtaposed to this film that's mostly in a non-American culture. And I thought that is the same reason that I enjoy watching – I love watching documentaries about the States made by countries other than us.
Okay.
I love that outside perspective, because they don't candy coat, but they're also not cruel.
Yeah.
It's just this is how life is in the, you know, in the American habitat, and here's the people who live in the American habitat, and this is how they act, and this is what they do, and compared to outside of America, and it's that kind of perspective. I really enjoy, but it was kind of subtle, but there you go.
Can I make a logical leap?
Yeah.
I think that this might be a stretch. So go on this journey with me. Pack a bag.
Okay. All right. I have snacks.
One of the reasons I think that you might enjoy this movie so much, and I know that one of the reasons that I did, was because I felt like it was about the closest story to a Star Trek the Original Series episode that I had seen in a long time.
Oh my God, yeah.
Because there's
that's a wonderful observation, and I agree with that.
Yeah, because it wasn't about violence for the sake of violence, really. It wasn't about race. It wasn't about sexism. It was about the story of, you know, of Spock's kid coming back and saying that I'm heir to the, you know, to the diplomat throne, and then they have to fight in the, you know.
Yep.
But I was just, it's utopian, I guess, is what I'm saying, and that makes it more pure.
Yeah, it's also, like you said, the Star Trek, the Original Series, tried its dead level best to make equality and across the board humanity just like normal.
Yeah, it was this thing. Yeah.
And it's like, what would it be like if we all lived like, you know, like everyone was equal, and humanity was equal across the board, and you know, how would we deal with situations if you know we could live like that?
Right.
And No, I like your perspective. I agree completely.
It felt utopian,
mm-hmm.
and we don't get that from anything right now. Mm-hmm. There's no media. There's nothing we can watch that, like I was saying, I think maybe I was talking to you about it or someone else. The closest thing we get to that is the show Orville, which I still think, I was Cole, you still need to give a shot, Catherine. You need to swear to me that you're going to make it past the first two episodes. Because it encapsulates and embodies what I feel that parody of society should be. You know, and it's, yeah, it's interesting in the movie that the links that they go to protect that utopia, you, yes, know, and the links that they are then willing to go to break down those walls when they realize what's going on outside of them.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah,
cool. It's cool.
It is, especially, and also addressing the issue of isolationism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know we have our own wall discussion going on here, but Europe has this unbelievable, massive refugee issue that they're dealing with, and they have for several years now. Of these, you know, European countries just being flooded with refugees, and, you know, trying their dead level best to decide what to do and what not to do, and where to draw the line, and it's tough.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough because you and if you think about it and you try to relate to it, I mean, think of yourself as, you know, you have a home, you have an apartment or a house. Well, if somebody was cold on your doorstep, yes, of course you'd let them in and dry them off and maybe give them some clothes and something to eat. But what if there were 50? What if there were 60 people out there? Mm-hmm. Where do you have to stop for self-preservation?
Right.
And it's a tough subject, and I really liked that the movie kind of touched on, you know, we can't lock the entire outside world out. What do we do while still maintaining the utopian society,
yeah,
that we just discussed that they had? So
it's cool.
Anyway, so there's that.
Well, we need to start wrapping this thing up for the evening. So do you have any final thoughts about the Black Panther movie?
I hope they make another one only if they can maintain the standard of the first one. I'd hope they don't just make an obligatory sequel.
Yeah, and I almost hope they don't. There's a part of me that hopes that they just say, okay, we wanted to tell Black Panther's story. We told the story.
I want to see the Black Panther again.
Oh, yes.
But I don't know that I want to see this story again. The extension of it, you know what I'm saying?
No, yeah, absolutely. I kind of treat it like Wakanda. Now we know it's there, we kind of have to forget it so it stays perfect, right?
Exactly. Exactly. and you know, and oh, and those little glowy flowers.
Oh yeah.
You know everybody who's been watering them all these years, everybody just filled their pockets before they set that thing on fire.
You know they're out there, right?
Oh,
they're...
yeah. There's like, I saved one. I saved one too. Are you kidding, man? I wore the cargo pants. I got six of them.
I wore the cargo pants.
I'm going to pass you back over.
Thank you, Catherine. You're amazing.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I had so much fun. Thank you for letting me talk. I love your show, and I'm so proud of both of you guys.
You're part of the show. You love your show. You're as much a part of this show as Cole and I are. You let us play in our sandbox. You come on. You straighten us out. You remind us that we might be middle-aged white guys, but there are women in the world that we probably should talk about at some point, you know?
Oh, well, take care, and happy days, podcasting world. I'm handing you over to Cole.
All right, that was...
I'm glad Catherine got on there because she remembered some of the stuff that she and I had talked about, her observation about the greater Marvel Universe. We all know that it's part of the greater Marvel Universe. Like she said, she saw Ant-Man show up. It's like, no, I'm Army Ant-Man.
Well, that was the whole time I was in there. I'm like halfway through the movie, I'm like, one of these goddamn pretty Chrises is going to show up and I'm going to have to leave. I'm not going to be able to stay here for this.
Yeah, and that was kind of refreshing in the way that so much of this film was refreshing. Just so many so darn many places that they could have had missteps or done the traditional or the half expected because you've seen this chestnut, and they veered clear of them, and it's like, dang.
Well, I mean, like, they were robbing an art museum.
Yeah.
And I believe in New York. Right?
Exactly.
And no superhero showed up to stop them. Which would have been a really easy place. You know, it's Cape Central.
Or at least one of them might have gotten caught by the...
Yeah.
Or at least they get pursued, and then they have to use, you know... They have to reveal the whole claw arm thing.
Yeah, Hawkeye shows up and like, oh, is this one of yours? And then they, yeah, okay, he, now he we got...
Shoots claw in the hand. It's like, ah! It's
yeah, sparks bang. And... Narr.
Arr, Jim Ladd. So, yeah, it was just all around refreshing, satisfying, and I think that the potential for the character, and... One of the other things I want to point out before we really pass due for wrapping up is that this, like so much of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is a continuance of building the greater universe. And what this does is it takes us full circle. It brings us back to Earth.
Yes. Yes. It grounds us.
Yeah, because we're getting back to the Earth-based superhero. The Earth-based character after having explored distant galaxies and other dimensions and the realms of magic and dimensional travel and what have you, that now we're coming back to Earth because that's where we need to be next.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, good night. You've got so much more coming, and it's just amazing, and... Eventually, I just need to see the cinematic take on the Serpent Crown. I know they kind of winked at that a long time ago, back when Infinity War was supposed to be two movies.
Right. Which, by the way, just got moved up to April.
Oh.
Today, just got moved up to April.
Maybe they use that unrealistically quick special effects that were in the Deadpool trailer. unrealistically quick.
Oh my god. All right, well, we need to press on into that good night
out here so you can have a good night's sleep, and thank you for staying up late with us for this. Apologies for how long it took to get the last issue of Hey Kids up. This will be up the same week it's supposed to go up, so and thank you for joining us every week for Hey Kids Comics. We just can't get enough of it. If you happen to be able to attend AltCon 2018 in Addison, Texas, in just a very short little while, what is that, the 14th? No,
yep. 16th, no, 15th? You're right.
I'm veg.
You're on track.
All right. Let's start again. You know, AltCon 2018, Addison, Texas, March 15th through the 18th. March 15th, by the way, I can't say this enough, is a free tryout day. The hotel has free parking. It's free admission. Check it out. You're going to want to go downstairs and get your $60 badge and stay the rest of the weekend, which is about what some of the big cons charge you for one day.
Mm-hmm.
And the big cons don't have over 400 things going on over the course of the weekend. And the big cons don't have the incredibly fun Wesley Urey and Kathy Coleman from Land of the Lost. This time being joined by Philip Paley, a.k.a. Chaka.
Oh, my God.
About a trifecta. So, and the guest list is slowly growing. So be sure and check that out, because we're going to have, in addition to myself, who I am a fixture at AllCon. I'm actually a group captain of Games in Theory, the game show track. So plug, be sure and check out the game shows all weekend long. There's like 30-some-odd game shows going on. But I got it on good authority that this year's Don't Lose Your Geek Card game show will officially be the Hey Kids Comics edition, not just the comic book edition, because it will be myself and my incredible colleague, friend, life partner, and more, none other than our own Andrew Farmer.
Listen, I've already threatened Eddie, told him I was coming for him. Oh, we're getting the band back together, baby.
Levels are amazing. I think at some point, if we get to go out for dinner, I'm going to order 4 fried chickens and a Coke, just because we are the brothers that we are. So be sure to check that out. You can find out about that and other conventions in the state of Texas at Convention Awareness Project Texas, cap-tx.info. We are, of course, coming to you from the Jedi Cole Universe at jedicole.com. You can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. And look for us with the Hey Kids Comic Show, or
HK Comics Show on Instagram and on Twitter.
I'm half of this goddamn show, and I have no clue where to find them. Bring in the young ones, because they help us out there. Also, in addition to Don't Lose Your Geek Card Comics, by the way, if you're going to be able to attend another amazing game show that almost didn't happen, win Starman's comics.
Oh, God.
Matt Starman Morrison had to recuse himself from all comic book related game shows about 5 or 6 years ago or long, because no one could compete.
We could hardly compete.
Yeah,
as the hosts of the show.
We didn't even have a chance to register the answer on the card before he gave it to us. We could have left them blank and he would have got them all right.
You're right.
So this is a Win Ben Signs Money style game show where contestants ultimately go head-to-head with Starman himself in a bid to win Starman's comics.
That's right. That's right. Not to mention the fact that, you know, we're going to be doing, I'm sure, various points in times, live podcasting, whenever we can find a spare second in a room.
Introduced over at the ye olde Infinicon last year, my podcasting day camp is now coming to AllCon.
Heck yeah.
So 3 days of podcasting day camps with giant marshmallows on skewers for all in attendance. So you don't want to miss out on that if you've got a sweet tooth first thing in the morning. And yes, the return of onliners. Catherine just reminded me.
Oh my God, I got work to do. All right.
Yes, you've got some serious work to do. So I'm going to let everybody go. Thank you again, everybody. This has just been an amazing episode. And we'll just remember, these boots were made for Wakanda.
Damn it. Damn it. All right. On that note, we're leaving. We'll talk to you all next week. Bye, everybody.